I'm happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Edna Riley. She is a health insurance educator, advocate, and broker, and is here to talk to us about what is going on and what it means to you. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, how are you?
Good, good. It's great to have you back. And
thanks.
It's an important time of year for those of us who need to deal with our health insurance.
Yeah, it's kind of the only time of year for those of you who need to deal with your health insurance.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means open enrollment, which this year, it started last November 15th, and it runs through February 15th. So if you haven't signed up, you have about a month left to do so, and if you don't do so, you might not be able to until this time next year. Well, actually, late
November
in the
next
year.
Yeah, November, right. Later this year.
Yeah, they're actually talking about making it October through December, but we'll see. Those rules haven't come out yet.
Okay.
How they're going to do it.
Meanwhile, if you don't have health insurance or if you want to change your health insurance, now, between now and February 15th, is the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that a lot of people are eligible for help, eligible for subsidies, and they don't even know it.
Yes. I keep getting phone calls from people who are self-employed, people who think they make too much money, people who have households with children. The subsidy structure is based on the size of your household. So, if you have, more than two people living in your house, you definitely should check into it. If you are over age 50 and your premiums are quite high, you should check into it, because it is a rather complicated formula which takes into your age, what premium is available in your geographic area. And the subsidy structure is pretty helpful. A lot of people are finding it, a good benefit for themselves to help pay for those health insurance premiums, and they're able to afford a better plan than they anticipated.
What's the difference between one plan and the next?
Well, it's all about, the thing I keep repeating to my clients is it's not healthcare, it's health insurance. And so you don't really see huge differences between, say, a silver and a gold. You will see a difference between a bronze and a silver, mainly because a bronze doesn't really pay for anything until you have something horrible happen. But the biggest difference between the metallic levels seems to be the deductible and then the out-of-pocket maximum. And the out-of-pocket maximums are not cheap. They've actually gone up with this change in the healthcare system. This year, the maximum allowed is $6,600. And what that means is if you have a hospital stay and you didn't have any other hospital bills in between, or, really any other medical bills in between, you're basically paying $6,600 out of pocket, and then the insurance pays the rest.
What happens to people who just don't have the $6,600?
Well, that's where the subsidy structure comes in, and part of the reason it can be very helpful is there is, within this federal help formula, a secondary level of benefit called cost reduction. If you qualify financially, you can get not only a subsidy, but you can also get access to a less lesser out-of-pocket maximum. Meaning, you come to me and the hardest part is trying to figure out which plan it is that you want. There's 52 plans available when you log into healthcare.gov.
Good heavens.
So, first you need to figure out which one is suitable for you. You go through all of that before you even log into healthcare.gov, and then you log in and suddenly there are different looking plans. And they have lower out-of-pocket maximums and lower deductibles. And that's because you've qualified for a cost reduction. So it's not only the subsidy level, but also, if your income falls within a certain tier on the chart, they will give you access to a plan that, say, has a $2,000 out-of-pocket maximum as opposed to $6,600.
So do you see lots of people coming in to your practice who, for example, have never had health insurance before?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few. If you've never had any chronic medical issues or even any sort of accident, you think, well, why do I need it? And I think that's valid except it's health insurance. You know, why do we need car insurance? Because X might happen. You know, I'm a little bit on the fence about mandating it myself for everybody. I don't think every 20-year-old necessarily needs to have it, except if they go skiing and they fall down.
Or someone hits them in a car when they're stopped at a light or anything else.
Yeah, car's not really a good example just because car insurance is supposed to cover it, and that's already mandated.
Right.
but still,
accidents happen. Yeah.
Right, and you know, we talked about this last time. It's a halfway measure. It certainly is better than it was before, in my opinion. You know, again, having to come up with $6,600 is really difficult for, you know, not a few people. If you have kids in college, how are you going to come up with $6,600 in addition to paying, you know, the ridiculous college tuitions? But it's better than it was, because it used to be that you could get a really cheap policy, except the out-of-pocket maximum was $30,000.
Well, it used to be that you would lose your house, your car,
exactly,
and everything you own.
Yeah, the leading cause of bankruptcy was medical costs.
Is that gone now?
I don't think it's been in place long enough to make an accurate depiction. I think that was the goal, though, was to help decrease that incidence of bankruptcy.
Right.
And people really just becoming impoverished because of a medical issue. The problem is, though, there's nothing in the law that caps medical costs. You know, basically doctors, hospitals, labs, whoever are allowed to charge whatever they want to charge, what quote unquote what the market will bear, except who's shopping around? And particularly in this neck of the woods, we don't have anywhere to shop to.
Right.
We have a hospital.
Right.
Unless you want to travel to Albuquerque.
Which is not an option.
And it's
in
certainly
case
not
of emergency and so on.
Well, and it's not an option when you're not feeling well. Who wants to drive 52 miles when you're not feeling well,
right,
you know,
right,
back and forth? So, but it is better than it was before. And, you know, the silver lining really is the subsidy structure. A lot more people are eligible than think they are. I had a young woman that I worked with for years, and I didn't hear from her during this changeover, and then suddenly I heard from her, and she's got, you know, two kids. And I said, you know, you really ought to investigate this, because I bet you're a self-employed person. I bet you could get some help. Even if the kids are eligible for Medicaid, they count as part of the household. So, and it's easy enough to check. You can go to healthcare.gov and type in the search place, type in income eligibility, and there's a really nice chart that shows, you know, what level you would, what the federal says you would be eligible for Medicaid, and then what levels is the cost reduction and the subsidy. And I think for a single person, it's somewhere in the $60,000 range, that if you're below that, you could conceivably be eligible for subsidy.
If you have kids.
No, that's for a single person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I'm pulling that right out of my head. I haven't looked at it. But it's substantial, and more people get help than realize. It's very generous, and people should be taking advantage of it, because health insurance premiums and health insurance costs just keep going up the same way medical costs do.
Right. And I mean, I think the thing that's a little bit scary to me looking forward is this whole Affordable Care Act was put in place with the blessing of the insurance companies, because it didn't abolish them. I mean, it didn't
right.
make a sort of Medicare for all single payer thing, which a lot of people, including me, were hoping for.
Right.
Or a public option, which was essentially a option to choose to be in Medicare even if you're under 65. So none of that happened. The insurance companies blessed this one because it gave them lots and lots and lots of new customers. The very people you're talking about
right.
that didn't have health insurance before.
Right.
Once those people are all in the market, how are these companies going to keep making money? And the only thing I can think of is to keep jacking up our premiums and or offering us fewer benefits for those premiums. So it's not a nice future we're looking at.
No. I mean, you brought up Medicare, and I understand everybody wants Medicare or some sort of nationalized system that way. Medicare's not fabulous. Medicare doesn't pay for everything. Medicare really is just insurance. that you've paid for your working life. But there are still deductibles, and there's some fine print in Medicare that's not, it's not 100% fabulous. Do I think it would be a better system than what we have now? Maybe. You know, there's so many, you know, would the doctors all go along with it? I don't know. There's a lot of doctors in Santa Fe that won't accept Medicare assignment. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think that's a catch-all solution necessarily. But I also don't think anybody anywhere on this planet has the right solution.
Well, we talked about with T.R. Reid some years ago when he wrote that wonderful book about medical insurance in 10 different countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And how most countries, especially countries that have thought this out and put it in place rather than working with the sort of patchwork piecemeal system that we're working with here, they spend a tiny fraction compared to us on administration and overhead.
Yeah. In my experience, that's not, you know, we're now only allowing 20% for administration.
Right, but I mean, there are people
overhead.
Who have 2-6%.
I agree. And I think we definitely need, though, to cut the profit out of medical care. You know, the price of prescriptions in particular is just, how can you adjust health insurance when, you know, there's prescriptions, like I have a prescription that costs $400 a month. My premium's not $400 a month, so where is that coming from? That's coming from everybody else's premium. I think the system is sicker than just health insurance. Not to excuse the health insurance carriers by any means, but I think it's a bigger problem, and it hasn't been addressed adequately by anybody.
We're talking to insurance educator, advocate, and broker Edna Riley. So do you have a lot of young people who are showing up and asking to get health insurance?
Not really. This, to me, is one of the failures of the system. I mean, I understand why they need to have it. You know, certainly if everybody is mandated to have it, they should be mandated to have it too. But the problem for me with that is it's insurance, which is a financial product. It's not, again, it's not healthcare. So, you know, the idea behind insurance is to protect financial assets. Young people today don't have any financial assets. You know, they're working hard. They barely have any income. They're, particularly in this area, it's difficult for them to find a job, particularly a well-paying job. They're not necessarily investing in having a house or anything like that that needs the protection that insurance provides. So, you know, thank goodness there's the catastrophic segment of plans in addition to the metallic plans that anybody under 30 can buy to try to get the lower premium. But at this point, a lot of young people seem to be more willing to take the penalty on the taxes just because it's a lot less than having to purchase the health insurance. Again, they're going to get into trouble, though, if they do have an accident and they end up in the hospital. They're going to be liable for those probably extreme costs. You know, even a compound fracture of a leg from an accident that just needs a simple surgery is still going to be, you know, $20,000-$25,000 at least.
And there's no protection for them under those circumstances if they've decided to forego health insurance.
Right. If they're working, they're not eligible for Medicaid, and they decided not to get health insurance, they're going to be liable for that and that.
So there's your new bankruptcy.
Exactly.
Class.
That's going to be the new pool of people who... But like I said before, it's not a perfect system. It still needs a lot of work, and that's unfortunately one of the holes that's in it. So the other thing I wanted to make sure people knew about the subsidies was that if you got a subsidy in 2014, you need to make sure that you get the form that's required for your tax return that needs to be filed by April 15th this year.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was told that the way to get those forms, they're called 1095s. If you have a subsidy, the way to get those forms is by logging into your healthcare.gov account, which, as many people this year realized, is a lot of fun because if you, you know, did this back in October 2013, and you don't remember your healthcare.gov login, you have to call them because they're...
Oh, no.
Yes, because...
You can't just say, reset my password.
Well, you can, provided you remember your security questions. But remember, everybody had so many problems setting up those accounts right at the beginning.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I did hear from one client that they thought they were going to get mailed, but my information is that you have to log in. You know, the whole point of this system, as you mentioned, cutting out the bureaucracy was all going to be digital. You know, this is the edge of the sword. It's all digital. So now you have to remember your healthcare.gov account and log in and get that piece of paper for your accountant to do your taxes or for yourself to do your taxes, because there is a new section on the 1040 forms on the income tax returns for 2014 that's being filed this year, and that all has to be reconciled.
So 1095s, ladies and gentlemen. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you, which, I mean, it's sort of in the question of subsidies, but there's a lot of people. We talked yesterday on this program about how a study just came out that said 51% of American public school students are living in poverty.
Yeah, I saw that.
So you've got such a huge amount of income disparity, but within that, you've got people who maybe don't have computers, parents who are not literate in the bureaucratic systems of the United States, for example. You've got you and I and everybody we know can sit here and talk blithely about logging in and passwords and all this stuff, but we have a country in which a lot of that doesn't even apply. I mean, this conversation is gibberish.
Right. Well, I will say, having worked with some homeless kids here in town, they're not completely computer illiterate, mainly because a lot of them have cell phones, and they depend on cell phones for survival. In my experience, and again, this has to do, too, with the disparity of who's looking to buy health insurance. It's those people who have assets. So I'm, you know, typically not looking at parents of children. I'm getting more the older demographic of Santa Fe. And I'm actually finding quite a few people in that demographic who have no interest. They don't own a computer. They don't have email. They don't have a smartphone. They just don't care. Or they do have a smartphone. They use it for email. But in order to log into healthcare.gov, it's so small and problematic to use on a screen. It's just too small. So, yeah, that's a big problem. And then there's the whole security issue. I would say, you know, if you could find somebody who has a laptop that you can borrow or something like that, you can, when you go into healthcare.gov, check a box so that you can get paper notices from them as opposed to doing it online. And the other thing is you can call them. They can do just about everything directly over the phone.
Okay.
However, keep in mind, they're not necessarily all trained in health insurance. And so...
Then why do they have their jobs?
Well, they're very good at walking you through the healthcare.gov system until you get to those 52 plans. And then you better know what you want. Because they know terms like deductible and they know terms like out-of-pocket and all that stuff. But in order to tell you the nitty-gritty of how it's practically going to work, I'm not necessarily going to trust their expertise.
But we trust your expertise, Edna Riley, which is why you're here.
Thank you.
And if people who are listening want to contact Edna, they can call her at 989-8772. They can also write to edna@benefitsnm.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
be
you
happy to help.
And other brokers are there to walk people through this as well.
And also keep in mind, once again, that broker services are free. We're paid by the insurance carrier, so anybody who needs help, it does not cost the consumer a dime. It's all built into those rather disgusting premiums that you end up paying. But you're paying for it anyway, so why not get the help, particularly when it's local?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Edna Riley from Benefits New Mexico, thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.